Want a more fault-tolerant data center? Bring the availability of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Greetings all and welcome to another episode of TechNet Radio. I'm Dan Stoltz and I'll be your host today as we take a Shakespearean look at scale-out file servers. You can reach me on my blog at itproguru.com. If Shakespeare had run Windows, Hamlet would be a play about configuring failover clusters for storage. Today we discuss the scale-out file server configuration and why general use file server cluster shares may still have a place in your environment. This is part of a series of articles on SMB. You can find the index for all the articles at aka.ms/SMB3series. As usual with the SMB series, our guest will be Jose Barreto. We also have a special guest, Ned Pyle, joining us today. Welcome, Jose and Ned. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. Ned, I know you've blogged a bunch at the FileCab blog about this technology. Maybe you can give us a bit more information on your background?
So my background is, what I am right now, I'm a program manager and Windows Server. But I spent the first 8 years at Microsoft working in support in third-tier escalations in Charlotte, North Carolina. I came here about a year and a half ago to see how the other half lived. And all my background was in Active Directory and remote file systems, so it sort of naturally came to the remote file systems team here in Redmond.
Awesome. And Jose, I know you're going to be taking a bit of a backseat on this series, but I appreciate you joining us. Anyway, if you have anything that you want to chime in on, please feel free and welcome.
All right, thank you. And this will basically be Ned's show. So welcome, Ned, and I'm hearing you.
So today we're looking at why use general use file server clustered shares and the new scale-out file server in Windows Server 2012. These two types of Windows file servers have different goals and capabilities that come with trade-offs. I know it's critical to understand them when designing a solution, so perhaps we should start with a quick overview of these technologies and maybe how they're installed. I know there's major similarities there as well.
Sure. So starting in 2012, we started releasing this thing called Scale-Out File Server, and it added the ability for us to have a really big, powerful, robust remote file system with SMB3 and sort of move ahead of, if you think about general use file servers, anybody who had worked on NT4 would be very comfortable working on a general use file server, you know, today. They haven't changed very much. I mean, we've made incremental changes. Scale-out file server was a complete paradigm shift for us. It was the idea of saying, well, we're going to cluster things all the time. We're going to use simultaneous active-active shares that are available across all nodes. We're going to make all this bandwidth available to everybody. So if I've got 8 nodes, I've got 8 nodes of bandwidth, not just one file server. We'll naturally sort of manage it easier because we're going to treat all of these servers as just one big honking server, effectively. And the goal being, in the end state here, when we say scale-out file server, we try to always say out loud, for application data. So the real goal of this product is to be a super inexpensive but highly scalable back-end solution for Hyper-V and SQL, or your application enter here. It is not designed to be something that you would use for all my user profiles, which is kind of the gist of the other half of this conversation we can have about whether or not to scale out your file server.
Right. So the can you share a little bit more about the simultaneous active connections? It sounds to me like there's a lot of magic to make that happen, and maybe talk a little bit about bandwidth too, in terms of having that active-active environment.
Yeah, that's the cool sort of secret sauce part of scale-out. So when we talk about simultaneous active-active, is every cluster nodes, we have a storage cluster with, say, 4 nodes, makes, you create a share for accessing VHC. That share actually exists across all the nodes simultaneously, not just on the one. And then when you connect, no matter which node you end up connecting to, you're redirected to the underlying storage. It also means that if that node crashes, we have this technology underneath the covers called transparent failover that is basically a client running on your, you know, other servers, probably in this case, Hyper-V server talking to a storage cluster, that lets it know this is where everything went. And I'm actually going to connect you over to that other node, the active, you know, copy of your data with the handles open to your file, the handles preserved open, with what will appear to be zero interruption. And that, even though that process could take upwards of seconds or a minute, will actually pause the I.O. and then resume the I.O. so that your application, and Hyper-V and SQL Server are, you know, two examples of applications that really want to have uninterrupted access to the data. If it's interrupted, mm-hmm. they're going to be very upset. But we will actually resume everything under the covers without any interruption whatsoever. So if you're an end user and you're connected to a file server cluster and you connected, your application as an end user probably is pretty resilient to that kind of thing, because your application is probably Microsoft Word or Excel, and they've been sitting around being used to bad networks for 25 years.
Forever, yeah.
Forever. In fact, they sort of expect it. And in fact, they really sort of expect things to be bad, not good. They're constantly auto-saving. I mean, their entire life is around sort of preserving your experience. Versus something that's talking to a VHD or to a database, it has never had the concept of anything previously, you know, running elsewhere than on the same storage as the application.
Which is fast.
Yeah, and if the disk had gone, it wouldn't have mattered to the app because the OS probably went too.
Right.
In its mindset, there was never any concept of I could somehow lose connectivity to my storage. So this entire system is designed to make it so that you can inexpensively, you know, rather than buying a $5 million SAN and fiber channel and all this wacky stuff, use a Windows server to be an inexpensive but still very scalable back end, and have the smarts built into the client-server architecture so that when there are network problems, which are going to happen, or when the nodes do crash, or somebody trips over the power cable, the apps, Hyper-V, you know, thousands of VMs or SQL databases, are completely unable to tell that anything happened.
Awesome, and I know the inexpensive piece of that is going to be a welcome addition to IT departments, for sure.
I hope so.
What does it mean for the available bandwidth? Because if you have multiple copies of the data in multiple places, I would think there's a bit of a hit there. So can you tell me a little bit about available bandwidth?
Well, the nice thing is you still have let me back up for a second. We actually have a couple extra technologies here that we introduced starting in 2012 with SMB3 to make even further use of cluster and scale out. We have two technologies, one called SMB multi-channel and one called SMB direct, or you might have heard of it as RDMA or remote direct memory access. SMB multi-channel is similar to load balancing in the sense of I can take multiple NICs, or I can even take RSS capable NICs and create multiple connections from one computer to another computer and use up more bandwidth if it's possible. So, you know, I can only send so much data through, you know, one connection, but I can actually start doubling down or quadrupling down or whatever, depending on the kind of hardware and availability I have to get faster, you know, or not faster, but get more data pumped through in the same amount of time.
Right.
And to be direct is, you know, really a specialized kind of network is what you're talking about. SMB Direct says we're going to take a lot of the processing of all this and actually move it from the CPU of the server and the client into the CPUs of the NICs themselves, and then give them a tremendous amount of bandwidth and dedicated connections. And these are still, generally speaking, much less expensive than fiber channel. And they, depending on which SMB direct topology you decide on, there's three, and sometimes you might consider more. It doesn't require you to necessarily go and buy specialized network infrastructure. So you have some specialized NICs, but you can still use regular, you know, switched.
Right.
nothing too crazy in the, you know, the very expensive world of, you know, switching and stuff like that.
Excellent. I think our audience knows already knows a lot about the SMB multi-channel, the and the SMB direct. Does the scale-out file server require these technologies, or does it just give you an added, you know, added capability if you deploy it?
Added capability.
Awesome. So how about a management? I mean, you're doing a lot with, you know, active and making sure that, you know, you're doing the synchronization, making sure that everybody knows who's up and who's not. And it sounds like a management nightmare. So has Microsoft done something to simplify this process, or what does that look like?
Well, the funny part is, when you think about a general use file server, is a general use server, the original kind of file server cluster, requires you to do a lot more management because it only allowed you to have one active node, which meant you had to have a lot more awareness about, you know, the nodes that are alive and who are actually owning the data, truly owning the data. Because, you know, when you're going through scale out, you're going into CSV underlying disk with shared storage. And so all the nodes are talking to the storage simultaneously versus the older model, which is a little bit, you might say it's a little bit more fragile. And you end up, because you want the load to be balanced out, what people would do, because we didn't have an automatic way to do this, is I'd say, okay, well, Microsoft doesn't support active-active, but I could create a share and a share and a share and a share and spread those out manually across four nodes. Mm-hmm. And that way, each node's actually theoretically doing the same amount of work for different data. And then if something happens, you know, one node might get a little bit overloaded or whatever, but you know, it wouldn't be so bad. But it involves a lot of sort of policy management. And when you use scale-out, you just say, honestly and theoretically, you just create one share, and you just, that's it. You're done. You're done working. That's the end of it. Because you don't really care about the individual nodes anymore. They're pretty much interchangeable. And you don't care about them, which one's holding the active, which one's not, because it doesn't matter anymore. They all are. The other half of that is, and this started in 2012, and you've seen this throughout all of Windows everywhere, is the requirement for PowerShell for anybody with more than 10 computers in their entire environment is pretty obvious right away, you know, or something like it. You know, I'm not going to sit here and shill on PowerShell the whole time, but it definitely, you want some kind of command line management solution if you start dealing with, you know, an office that's larger than 50 people working there. And you could manage everything throughout the entire scale-out solution using the SMB Share PowerShell module.
Okay, so it sounds like we've taken pretty good care of the administrator in deploying this new technology. I can see how it really benefits the back-end systems like Hyper-V and SQL Server, you know, specifically the two that you mentioned and others, where you have lots of data. And frankly, usually those are the ones that are the most important, which are the ones that you need this kind of technology, and giving you the flexibility of moving that data elsewhere is awesome. But what does this technology mean to the end user, for the information worker holding a laptop? You know, their data needs are so much different than, you know, Hyper-V and SQL Server. You know, they're constantly opening and changing, closing, deleting, copying files. What does it mean to them?
So that's the best question I've been asked all day, Dan.
Glad I can make your day.
So that's the very interesting part, and this is the part where we have generated a huge amount of confusion with our customers, and it's 100% our own fault. Is, you know, we built a scale-out file server. We were extremely proud of it and excited about it, and we talked about it in the same way that I just talked about it with you, talking about all the positive aspects of it and not doing a good job of explaining when you probably shouldn't use it. And there are, when it comes down to the individual, you know, information worker, the department that needs, you know, a shared file share for them to actually, you know, to work on, you know, collaborate on documents or roaming user profiles or redirected folders, you know, for individual users with offline files, any of those scenarios that normal the last 20 years of Windows file server, that scale-out solution is effectively not just overkill. You might just say, well, it seems like a lot of, you know, complexity for a solution which is not that important to the end users, and you'd be right. But even more importantly is there's other aspects we baked into scale out to make sure that those applications like Hyper-V and SQL Server cannot possibly lose data. And when we talk about scale out, what we're really talking about is this thing called continuous availability. And continuous availability at its highest level is simply us telling the share, any data that comes through this share, we must commit it to the disk, fully commit it to the disk, or what we call write through, before we tell anybody that we're done, which means that you become very synchronous. And for an application like Hyper-V or SQL Server, that's good. And they like that. I mean, they like the guarantee. And because of the way that they write data, it actually doesn't really affect them that much on performance. You know, it probably affects them a little bit, but not that much. When it comes to you as a person, as a user, like say you want to copy a 1 meg, you know, a 1 gig file to a file server, mm-hmm. you're used to sending that file up and the file server saying, yeah, I'm writing it and I'm, you know, I'm actually probably doing some caching here and some buffering there and I'm letting you know things are going okay. But you can continue to get on with your life. When you get into a world of write-through and synchronous, it will become noticeably, because it's truly slower mm-hmm. for you as the user. And it you know, it can add up to, you know, it can be half again as slow. It could be a third again as slow. I mean, depending on your application, I did a lot of various, you know, sort of rude tests to figure out if I could see some aspects of all this. Applications, the way that they would write data, that they would be 10 times slower, 20 times slower. I mean, like, not just a small inconvenience. I mean, you would be like, what the heck is going on?
Right.
So the idea here is you want to keep in mind that not only does the user probably not appreciate that performance hit while their, you know, folder redirection is running much slower and then their login it seems to be slower, or if they're copying files, or if their application, their little, you know, user application starts looking kind of squirrely, it's also sort of irrelevant to them because most user applications, you know, we go back to that Word example, it has so many copies of your data and it works in such a way, like offline, you know, temporary copies and making little, you know, recovery copies everywhere, that really all you're doing with those types of apps is you're not getting any faster, you're not getting any safer, and you're potentially getting slower and certainly probably, you know, annoying somebody. And when you think about it, in the end, in a lot of business, in a lot of businesses, you know, there's 50,000 users who are there to make the real money. Mm-hmm. And you want to, every second they're sitting there waiting for the computer to respond, it's time they're not making money. They're not doing their job.
So, I mean, it sounds like there's a potentially a pretty significant cost in terms of performance for the information worker or that type of an environment. But I know, I mean, I know Microsoft. So it sounds to me, if I could just recap for a second, it sounds to me like the scale-out file server is really designed for back-end data, right? For,
yes.
for application data, as you called it.
Yep.
And because of the performance hit that you get and because of all the other things that it's doing to give you that really super high availability and all the checks and balances, that there may not be a lot of reason to take the cost performance hit for continuous availability for file shares. Are there any you know, benefits to using this technology on a simple, you know, network share type of an environment for information workers?
Yeah, I mean, if your users aren't the kind of users to copy, you know, big files around, and if your users are going to be using, I mean, I'll be honest, as far as you know, from the test perspective, we know are just using Office, Microsoft Office. I know from those two scenarios that they probably would never notice any degradation in performance whatsoever, and you get the advantage yourself of, you know, a little bit easier management experience on the file server that we talked about earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
The tricky part, though, is really not the perf. The perf part is actually pretty managed. Like I said, it's pretty manageable for the end user. Most of them
okay.
probably wouldn't even notice. The real problem is when you're using a scale-out file server, you must use cluster shared volumes, that file system. And CSV does not allow around 75% of the information worker features to work. So if you look at regular SMB, everything works fine. And a user doesn't know or care what SMB is. But things like branch cache, DFS namespaces, DFS replication, file classification, dynamic access control.
Work folders.
Home
directories.
NFS. A million things that they've been using for the last decade or two are simply not possible anymore. It's not that they won't work well. They simply do not work, period. And you might, the really sort of unfortunate situation that I don't want to see is people set this up with at the basic level and find, hey, this works pretty well, and the perf, you know, is sort of effectively the same. I don't care so much. But then down the line, somebody says, hey, the news file server is working great. When are you going to turn on DFSR? And when are you going to add file classifications so we can, you know, we have like auditing and we have, you know, high impact business practices managed by like file class and dynamic access control, things that, you know, the federal government's making us manage. And you say, I can't turn those on.
Yep.
Yeah, you're going to have to start over, which is, you know, that doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun to me.
Yeah, but, you know, there's so many, I'm glad we cleared this up because I'm sure there's a lot of people that really were looking at this technology to, you know, really save in performance and availability kind of across the board. And it's really not designed for that. It's designed for some of the, you know, newer features that we've recently begun since 2012 with, you know, Hyper-V and SMB shares and SQL over SMB shares and stuff like that. So for those, it's a great solution. You know, but there's a lot of other technologies that Microsoft has built, in the last number of years, in the last several years, to really help the information worker and the IT administrator in terms of managing that information worker data. I mean, one technology I look at just that to me is almost a godsend, and that is the availability of having history or, you know, prior copies of my files and having a user be able to right click on a file and say, hey, you know, restore the file that I had, you know, that I had yesterday that I was working on. With all the technologies that are built in, I think it's important that the customers really recognize that the technologies that we're putting in place are there for a particular reason. And if you use them for those reasons, you're going to have an awesome killer solution. But if you try to kind of cross those reasons and don't understand what the rationale is behind them, then you may be not doing yourself much good.
That's an excellent sum up of. Well, you could have just said that. You know, I was just talking, Dan.
So, Ned, is there anything else you'd like to share about this technology? Anything you think we might our users might still not be clear on, or administrators might still not be clear on?
Oh, well, one thing, just to say that I didn't say anything for the whole podcast, I'm going to step in here. One question. So you described how scale-out might not be a good option. So what is the option, and how do you configure the environment for an information worker, and can I get all that benefit that we talked about on other areas of SMB if I'm not doing scale-out?
You asking or you telling?
Oh, he's asking. I think it's a great question. I wish I had that. Wish I was smarter to think of that one.
Well, I mean, the gist of it is you can continue to use general use file servers on a cluster, and clustered file servers are, I mean, always a good idea. You have a sort of a partial option, which is you can create a scale-out file server solution, but here's the thing about continuous availability. It literally is just a flag set on a share. And if I uncheck it, you know, using PowerShell or using a server manager, and there might even be some other way that Jose knows, you turn off, you know, a lot of the write-through pieces and things where you've said, well, okay, I don't care that I can't use these other, you know, IW-specific features like replication and FCI, but I also do love the idea of scale-out, and I do love the idea of, you know, active-active. But I don't want any sort of performance write-through happening. That is sort of a middle-of-the-road approach you can take. It's not one that we particularly document or even recommend, but if you've got it in your heart that you want to use scale-out for IW, and you've got it in your heart, and this is a big risk you're taking, that you're never going to need any of your classic IW features, and you somehow have a crystal ball that says, I know what my manager is going to be thinking 2 years from now, then, yeah, you can go ahead and use that. And one interesting other aspect here is if you want to use a regular general use file server, we call it, is you don't have to sacrifice. Let's say that you just, you know, the scale-out file server is not going to work for you because of the way your users work, because of the data you need to access, because you need information worker features like DFSR or FCI or any of those other things I listed out before, is you still get all the SMB3 advantages starting in 2012. They all work, things like multi-channel and direct and, you know, things like durable handles and this, you know, giant litany of, you know, performance improvements, some of them which are even specifically back in SMB 2.1 were designed for information workers. Because here's the gist of it. Here's my main point. 2003 server is the, you know, the last of the SMB1 servers we ever made, where it only did SMB1, and that guy's going away in July of 2015, so it's getting up on the, what, 18 months mark? I mean, at this point, it should be high on your radar of things to get rid of and replace, and if you go to 2012 or 2012 R2 or, you know, maybe, you know, at least 2008 R2, getting to the benefits of SMB2.1 or SMB3, that protocol has a lot of advantages for information workers long before you worry about setting up a scale-out file server or not.
Got it. And you know what? There's so many advantages to SMB3. What I'm seeing in the field is people are loving it. And they're putting it in as quickly as they can. You know, certainly whenever they rev the boxes, and a lot of cases what I'm seeing is people revving those boxes because they want to take advantage of that technology. It's just so much faster. And it gives them all the extra capabilities too. So I think in years past it was a scenario where people held onto technology for a decade. But I think those times are changing because people are realizing that the technology is changing so rapidly that they can gain so many extra benefits out of it that they're really kind of pulling the trigger and letting it roll. So I mean, it's all good, right?
Yeah, you can thank smartphones for that, I think.
is that the culprit?
15 yeah. minutes, so everybody's now used to the idea.
Yeah. So you had on your blog post, you had an awesome grid, I guess, of the general use file server versus the file of scale out file server. You know, individual features and what's available and what's not. We'll throw that up there for a sec. Maybe try to make that available as well, or give a link to that blog post where our users will have access to that. I think it's a great chart to let people understand what they can and can't do, you know, with the general use file server versus the scale out file server. So with that, Jose, some great questions there. Do you have anything more you want to jump in on?
No, I think this is a great recap of those capabilities. I love the table as well. And there's a minor change in some of the features that we support. And we welcome the addition of deduplication to the list. There's work that was done in R2.
Right.
And I think Ned made all the right points. I think it's important to understand what it can and cannot do, and what benefits you're getting, which ones you are not getting. And information working is huge, right? I mean,
thing people think about on file share, sure.
Yeah, we do a lot of it, and we keep doing it. There's more data being put on file servers every day, so we have to definitely do it. And not everything is Hyper-V and SQL. That's the new and shiny stuff that I've been particularly working on, but the IW workload is strong as ever.
Yeah, we haven't given up on it. Look at work folders. That's a brand new 2012 R2 feature that is, you know, in 8.1 that is specifically for information worker. I mean, we have not abandoned the IW by any stretch of the imagination.
Awesome. Anything else you'd like to add, Ned, or any other questions that I haven't thought to ask?
No, this is fantastic. I appreciate it, guys.
Well, awesome. Thank you both for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And look forward to our next edition of TechNet Radio.
Thanks, guys.